Say Your Piece was created with women in mind. Women are often unheard or spoken over, but not here. Here, women speak authentically and spiritually about their life experiences, no matter the subject. The pun is intentional. By saying their piece, they find their peace. Thanks so much for being here. My name is Ali Krasner. Let's dive in. Okay, so hello and welcome to this episode of Say Your Piece. So I'm
Hello.
here with Deidre. Hi, Deidre. How are you today?
Hi, I'm great. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. So you had your fan going over in New York and I had my heat on here in Paris. So
Funny.
I can see the difference in temperature. How are things going there in Brooklyn?
It's such a beautiful day. This is my favorite time of year. It's also my birthday month, so I feel like I get the best time. I was walking outside back from the coffee shop and there's this beautiful lilac bush. And I was carrying all these coffees and I was like, sorry, lilacs, not today. And then I had to put them down. I was like, oh, I can't not smell them. It's too nice.
That's so hard to choose between coffee and fresh lilacs. How can you choose?
I know. Well, the nice thing is I got both. So it's a good
There
day.
you go. There you go. It's a good day. Awesome. And Deidre, before we get into the subject, which is speaking a little bit about your experience being adopted, could you maybe give us a little bit of info about yourself?
Definitely. So I'm originally from Idaho. I live in New York City now. And I moved here after working on a cruise ship in the band playing keyboards. And I jumped ship and moved to New York to play for the circus. And I met my now husband my first day in New York 23 years ago. And we have two daughters now. And I'm also a teaching artist for Carnegie Hall. I do songwriting and help moms write lullabies for their babies. So I have a good life. I'm very happy.
Awesome. I love that you said that you jumped ship to come to New York. That was a very
Oh, I
colorful
didn't
way
even
to say
realize
it.
that pun. It's true. I was in Rome on the cruise ship and my friend was like the 90s. So she faxed and she's like, hey, you want to move to New York? I'm like, I don't have anywhere to stay, but sure, I'm coming. And I never left.
Awesome. So you're a musician by trade and we can see you've done lots of different things with your music. But you're here to talk to us today about your adoption story.
Yes.
So let's go a little bit back in time, right? And can you start your story for us?
Sure. So as I said, I'm from Idaho and I was born in Twin Falls, Idaho. I was adopted in 1971, the month after I was born. So almost 50 years ago this week. And Idaho, like a lot of states, is a closed state. So that's all changing now, and I'm not up to date on all the current rules and regulations, but basically growing up, I knew I was adopted. I believe when I was 8, my parents shared with me a document that I had, which was basically a picture of me with a different name that the doctor had named me, and some information about my birth parents that they had left at the hospital. And that was what I had. So I knew that my birth mother was a folk musician and that she played violin and she wanted to be a social worker. It also said that my great grandfather had died in a concentration camp and that my father was intelligent and liked the drums. So I had a few of these details, but and birth dates, but nothing else. And for the longest time, I think I just convinced myself that that was fine. That was enough. It felt a little prohibitive for me to search. So I just didn't even really think about it until I had my own kids. And I think when I've talked to a lot of adoptees, that's what they find is that they call it coming out of the fog. When you start waking up and thinking, oh, maybe I do want to know some more about where I'm from. Like maybe that's okay. And so when I had my kids, I started thinking, maybe I want to search.
So the closed adoption thing, just in case people don't know what that is, what does that mean exactly? Does that mean that people don't know the identity of their birth parents or the identity can't be revealed?
Right. So I was on tour with my jazz group once and we actually went through Twin Falls, Idaho. I took them back to the Northwest and I went upon the urging of my husband to the hospital where I was born. And I actually went up and asked. I was so terrified. I was like, I was born at this hospital and I was adopted. And she's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I can't share any of those details with you. And she just handed me this packet on adoption, basically. And so it, basically a lot of adoptees try to get their OBC, which is their original birth certificate. Because we all get a birth certificate, but it doesn't have like the original details, the original birth parents, maybe the original name. So that's becoming easier now. In different states, you can start sending away for your OBC, and that helps you find. But in a lot of states, especially in those times, it's just the adoption was meant to be closed and shut. They thought it was best for everyone that nobody knew any details. It was like you just start this new life with a new family, and the birth parents go on their way, and never the twain shall meet. That was the thinking. The current thinking, I mean, everybody has different opinions about this, obviously. But my personal opinion is that open is always better. Truth is always better because I'm not a fan of secrets. And it starts feeling like you're a secret when you're an adoptee. And so, for example, my sister-in-law had breast cancer, recovered, and then needed to, like, if she wanted to have a second child, she had to explore adoption as an option. And she was able to adopt, but it's been a very open adoption. They, like, sometimes they'll meet with the birth mother. And obviously this is different for, I just want to, like, the caveat of there's so many feelings that come up around this, and everybody has different emotions and opinions and gets really up in arms about everything. But I think what I'm trying to say for me is that it's good to talk about, because it felt like a very taboo topic for me for a long time, which is why the name of your podcast is so appropriate, because, you know, I think the more people talk about it and get it out in the open, it doesn't become so taboo and people will feel more free to at least explore their options.
Yeah. And I'm curious that you say growing up, you didn't really think to investigate. Do you think that's because it's something that wasn't talked about, or you just didn't really have that curiosity at the time?
I think for myself, and probably for a lot of adoptees, it's, you know, what I've learned since then is that being separated immediately from one's mother at birth is a trauma. It's a birth trauma. And there's a whole book about this called The Primal Wound, which basically talks about the very first thing the baby experiences in life is being separated from their mother. And somewhere in your psyche, like, you don't know that that's not your fault. You just don't know that. You're like, oh crap, like, I don't have this person anymore. So whoever you end up with when you're adopted or you're in foster care, I'll speak for myself. I was like, I will do whatever it takes to not be separated again. I do not want to be taken away. I do not want to be rejected. And the sense that I got was, once I received those papers, that should be enough. And, you know, I would often hear things like, and my parents were totally well-meaning, but they would say a lot of things like, God meant for you to have us. And, you know, this was all meant to be. And so I kind of felt like, well, who am I to question God? You know, like, the other piece of it was, I actually grew up in a very violent household. And this is not uncommon either. That, you know, there's all kinds of people that adopt. There's all kinds of people that have kids. But my father was a violent alcoholic. And my brother was the one that bore the brunt of his violence. But I really felt like questioning was not okay for me. It just was like, this is where I am. I was rejected. Like, you know, when I was in high school, I remember my dad saying, like, well, your mom, you know, the state wouldn't let her keep you. And she was like flinging cheeseburgers and all these lies. Like, none of it turned out to be true.
Okay.
I was like, oh, I need to just be so grateful that I'm here. Like, it could have been so much worse. So I just didn't think to question, honestly.
Yeah. So it sounds like the sort of story you were presented was that your parents sort of saved you in a way. So why would you ask about the person whom they saved you from?
Exactly.
Yeah.
My brother was also adopted, who I grew up with, and he found his birth parents as well. And I mean, it turned out his birth mom had the whole family living in a car and was super violent. So, you know, it's like, again, truth is always better. On the other hand, like, who's to say what if one life is better than another life? But also, I think that it's good to get rid of the fairy tale narrative, because adoption, and especially in media, is always like the fairy tale narrative of like the adoptee has been rescued.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
And yeah, I mean, so
even in Disney films and movies, you feel like they sort of, I don't know, promote that stereotype in a way of the adoptive parents as the savior. And of course, maybe
unless
sometimes
it's Mother
they are.
Gothel entangled.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, I think that like now we're starting to see some different narratives. Like I was watching, and I don't watch a lot of adoption narratives. They're everywhere in all culture. And I feel like now that I've found my birth parents, which I'll talk about in a second, because the journey was pretty amazing, I'm more able to watch that kind of stuff and actually have my feelings about it. But like This Is Us, for example, I don't watch it regularly. My husband does, but there are a lot of adoption talk in that. If you're familiar with the show, like every season it kind of goes into like the birth parents' point of view, the adoptive parents' point of view, the adoptee's point of view.
Okay.
They call that the adoption triad.
Okay, that's interesting. I didn't know that. Is that like the official name of the sort of narrative style?
Or? Well, that's the name of like the adoptee, the adopter, and the birth parents.
Okay, right.
So that's like and even that phrase is like, I'm probably outdated. Like you're probably going to get like email about this. There's all sorts of new research and new stuff all the time. And I found my birth mom in 2015 or 16, I can't even remember now, but and since then I haven't done as much, you know, looking up on all the adoption and adoptee forums and stuff, because there is a lot of grief and trauma and anger and all those things there, and I feel good about my life now, so I'm like,
yeah,
so I don't know what the current thinking is, just my own opinion.
Yeah, so you say that you found her in 2015 or 2016, so that's actually really, really recently. Is
it
the
is
reason
really
it's so recent because you've sort of took a long time in maybe deciding or working up the courage, or was she difficult to find administratively speaking?
It's an interesting question, because it was around this time, it was my birthday time, and I thought for my birthday gift to myself that year, I was going to send something to the ISSR, which is the ISRR, International Search and Reunion Registry. So it's a nationwide thing that you can send your information to, and they search and they see if someone's been looking for you.
Okay.
And then there's a match, you know, and if there's a match, they have these people called search angels and they call you or they get a hold of you. And I had sent one a long time ago to the Idaho one and never heard back. And I had always meant to send something to this big one. And I just had never, I don't think I was ready.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I'm just going to send this and sort of like see what happens. Meanwhile, all this ancestry.com stuff was just becoming a thing. Like kind of new. And I had gotten on Ancestry and some people had gotten a hold of me, and I had this match that was really high and it said maybe an uncle. I was like, ooh, I wonder who this is. So I messaged the person and I was like, hey, it looks like we're super closely related on Ancestry. And he's like, oh, that's funny. I was just about to like not get on Ancestry anymore. But yeah,
timing.
I don't know. And I said, I'm looking for my birth mother. She, you know, I was born in Twin Falls. She was a folk singer. He's like, oh yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's interesting though. Like my mom was a folk singer from Twin Falls too. I was like, what?
What?
He said, I think you're my brother.
Wow.
And it turned out he was my brother.
That's insane.
And he had found her like 20 years ago. And he's like, here's her name. And I was like, what am I supposed to do with this information?
Oh my gosh.
And he said, you know, I don't want to tell you how to do your journey. I think you should just keep going with the registry, which I think was so wise. But I remember like, so I immediately started Googling her name. Her name is Dinah Lewis. Hey, Dinah. So I started Googling her name and I heard this interview of her, and she was talking and she's like, oh yeah, my grandma was from Germany and she made me play the violin when I was younger, and I'm going into social work, and I used to be a folk singer, and I like sat straight up in bed and I was like, Ben, I think I found my birth mother. It was like a Sunday morning at 7 in the morning. It's like, okay. The whole day I was like Googling, I was like figuring this out. But Ben was like, he's very pragmatic. And he's like, well, until we get her birth date, we don't know for sure. Until it matches that thing on your birth certificate, her birthday. If that matches, then you'll know. So the whole day I'm like at the coffee shop. I'm finding this photo of her when she was a kid. And my friend's like, oh, that's such a cute picture of your daughter. I'm like, that's not my daughter. It might be my
Wow.
mother.
Wow.
And then around 7 p.m., 12 hours later, I found the birth date and I was like started crying. And I was like, I didn't know my feelings would be so huge.
Yeah.
I also didn't expect this to happen like right away. And then like a couple of weeks later, I got the call from the reunion registry. She's like, hi, this is Mary. And I have some news for you, some exciting news. And I was out like at the pizza place with my daughter. So I was like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. So like came home. I put them in front of the TV. Like I threw some candy at them. I had my tissues. And I called her back. I'm like, just like, we found a match. She's been looking for you for 30 years. And I was just like, what?
Wow.
And I was like, what should I do, Mary? What should I do? She's like, well, honey, I would just call her on the phone. And I was like, okay. And I called her like right then. I just called her. And it was
Wow.
so awkward and weird at first because we just didn't. She said that when my birth mother got the call from the registry that someone was looking for her, she like fell on the floor. She just was like, had not expected that at all. And what had happened was my mother was an addict and she didn't feel like she could, sorry about that, care for me. In the way that she needed to. And my brother, who I had found on Ancestry, was also given up for adoption from a different father.
Okay.
And she became sober. And when she became sober, as part of her recovery, she started searching for us.
Wow.
So yeah, it was crazy. So that could be a whole podcast. And then my brother, like just the meeting of her, the talking with her. And then she had always told me my birth father was this particular person that she'd had a fling with in college. And I was on the
Yeah.
verge in 2018 of sending him a letter because I found, like, Google, you can pretty much find anybody. I had found this person and he was alive. I was going to send him this letter saying, I think you're my birth father. And then once again, Ancestry stuff popped up. This person came on. He's like, I can't figure out how we're related. Like I'm really into genealogy. I'm doing all this search. Like I can't figure us out. We're supposedly really closely related. And I was like, I don't know. And I remember going to my therapist and I had her read the letter I was going to send to my birth father. And I was like, yeah, but I just got this text from this guy in Ancestries. I don't know. She's like, why don't you hold off on sending that letter until Monday? I was like, okay. And by Monday, me and this guy had done all this detective work and I had realized that the person my mother said was my birth father was not my birth father. In fact, it was a one night stand she'd had at this like Woodstocky kind of music festival with a bass player. And my birth father was a bass player. And it was like she was living in a commune and all this stuff. He had no idea I existed. And the person
Wow.
that helped me find was his, my father's half brother. Anyway, I don't want to get too into the who's the who of who, but long story short, he decided to be my sort of guardian uncle angel and call my birth father and tell him you have a child.
Wow.
And I remember like I was like, this is insane. Like both my birth parents are alive and they're like my mom was a folk singer and my dad was a bass player and this is crazy. And I think my birth father, Terry, he was like a little he just was, can you imagine like getting that phone call? Like, hey, do you
Yeah.
remember this one night thing that you had? Like went out to have seen like right after that he met his now wife. They've been married forever. He has two daughters. And at first I don't think he was ready. So I thought he didn't want to have anything to do with me. And I remember that feeling of just like again, the emotions, I like cry. It's such a weird feeling, Allie. I can't even describe it. Like, there's this thing when I found out about him and I laugh cried. Like, I laughed and cried at the same time for like 4 hours. I couldn't stop. Like, my birth mother was like, "Oh, I kind of remember that day. Yeah, I guess it wasn't the other guy." And like, here's the band I went to see. This band called the Sons of Champlin. And I was listening to this band, thinking of this music festival, and I was sobbing. I was laughing hysterically. And I was like, "This is where I come from. This is where I come from. I am found." And then the next day, my birth father, we talked. And he said, "I'm gonna cry." He said, "I never knew about you. And I'm so sorry that I didn't know.
Oh.
If I had known, I wouldn't have left, and I will never leave you again."
Oh.
And he hasn't. So I'm this lucky, lucky lady who has birth family who loves me. I have a birth mother who I found who loves me. I have a birth father I found who accepts and loves me. I have two half brothers on my mother's side, one of whom was a runner up at American Idol, Blake Lewis. Shout out to Blake. And
Oh,
we've
wow.
collaborated on music and done a bunch of stuff. And on my father's side, I have two amazing sisters. We talk on Zoom every week. One of them is a violist. Her husband's a bass player. My other sister is an amazing writer and visual artist. And also, I still talk to my adoptive family. My father's been dead for a long time, but my mom, that's been a whole journey. Her learning to accept why I would search. I feel like I just talked
Yeah.
straight for it. Sorry, Allie, if you haven't been able to get a word in edgewise, I'm just like blah, 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 blah. Sorry.
That's okay. That's why we're here. We're here to hear
Yeah.
your story. Yeah. It's just like
So
one
that's,
amazing thing after the other, you know? It's just like bam, bam, bam. Wow.
it has been amazing. And it's also been, I feel like if any adoptees are out there thinking about searching, I think it's a great idea. But I also, luckily I had a lot of therapy during this and I read some books and just learning to sort of titrate those expectations. Because you, even though my is like the best possible outcome,
Yeah.
like they're both alive, they've accepted me, it has been such a roller coaster. Because when adoptees come out of the fog, it's like we suddenly are, well, who the hell am I then? Like,
Yeah.
what has my life meant up to this point? And who are these people? And why did they reject me? And, there was a period of time where my birth mother and I didn't talk. She was dealing with past trauma because of it. I was dealing with sudden hatred. Like, how could you? It's a lot. And I definitely wouldn't do it alone. There's
Yeah.
support groups, there's like therapy. It's a lot, but it's worth it, I think.
Well, like you say, it's sort of a trauma from birth, right? As soon as you're born, you're sort of taken away from your mother. And I don't know if that's how it still works, or if certain states have closed adoptions and other ones have open adoptions.
I think it runs the gamut. My mother-in-law also was a foster mom of newborns for a long time, and that was really interesting to observe because I had to process my feelings around, because I was with a foster mom for the first month of my life. And just to watch my mother-in-law take in these newborns, and sometimes the parents really wanted to keep them, and or sometimes maybe they were in prison, or sometimes they wouldn't make the last visit. And it's just like after 2 years, the adoptive parents are waiting, and then the birth parent shows up at the last possible second. And then the person, there's
Yeah.
so many different stories. And I think that what people are realizing now is like, let's try to help these parents get the services that they need so they don't feel like they can't take care of a child. Let's help them.
Yeah, because I suppose there's two different situations. I suppose that either the child could be taken away from the parent, or the parent could sort of willfully decide that they're unfit to raise the child. I'm not sure how it works
Again,
exactly.
I think it's so different, and it's probably different all over the world. I think
Yeah.
that, sometimes there was also this era called the baby drop era, baby scoop, sorry, the baby scoop era, which was like, a time when to have a child out of wedlock was considered just bad, bad, bad.
Yeah.
So many women went to these like unwed mother homes. And were told, like, you are not a fit mother. Like, you need to give up this baby. And so many of them were like, I want to keep my baby. They're like, nope. And they just sent him out for adoption, you know. So a
Yeah.
lot of those women are, they're finding each other. Like, again, I'm not here to judge anybody's story. I think for my life, you know, my mom made the right decision for her. She thought I, if she kept me, that I would have be dead. Like, she would be dead. She'd leave me by the side of the road or something because she didn't have it together. She was an addict. And I think she made the right choice for her at the time, you know?
Yeah,
But I
that's the
think that
best
a
you can
lot of
do.
women are pressured into, well, it'll be better for the child.
Yeah. That sort of
I don't
brings
know.
up a whole other question of, yeah, who is society to decide who is a fit mother or not, right? Because as we've seen in the past, as you just mentioned, unwed women were not considered fit mothers, but maybe, hopefully, we wouldn't have the same idea in our heads today.
Right. And I feel like because I've been able to write lullabies through Carnegie Hall, I've had a lot of my assumptions changed as well. Just of who is a good quote unquote, you know, who is a good mother, a good parent, because I've been to prisons and helped moms write lullabies for their children there.
Wow.
And a lot of them are like, they're amazing moms. All they want to do is be back with their kids. It's
Yeah,
just,
yeah.
and it's often some random infraction, or they're waiting for trial, or, you know, it's like, and also it's where they grew up and who they were around. And it's,
Sure.
they're just sort of part of the whole system that's broken. But, you know, without fail, every one of those moms wrote lullabies for their children. And a lot of them were just like, I love you. I'm sorry. I want a different life for you. And I could see them as mom to mom, you know, like,
Yeah. Well, that's really beautiful, and as you said, sort of you're having your own children is kind of what sparked this this need to know, right?
I'm trying to teach them that questions are okay, you
Yeah.
know. Like, I remember when I was, my daughter, she was pretty young, my younger daughter, when I was finding Dinah. And I had found this old video of Dinah on YouTube singing a folk song when I was like trying to see if it was her. And my little one like came toddling in and she goes, oh, is that your mama? I was like, I think so. She goes, you have two mamas? I was like, yeah. And she goes, okay. Like, I feel like kids are, you know, kids are so much more open than we give them credit for.
Yeah, that's so funny.
They're
Yeah,
just
kids
like,
don't
oh,
judge. Yeah.
yeah, they're like, oh, more love. And that was what I wanted to leave everybody with is, it's sort of like when you have one kid and you think, how could I have two? I could never love the first one as much as the second one as much as the first one. It's like there is room for so much love. Like, all I've learned through this is that my heart has this infinite capacity to accept and to give love in a way that I never thought possible because I found this entire family, two families.
Yeah. Wow. That's such a beautiful thought to end with. And do you have any, I guess, advice for people who are maybe in the position you were in, maybe, what is it, 5 or 6 years ago now, and who are maybe starting to dig?
Yeah, I would say again, try to not go it alone and find someone who understands you and supports you because people will have opinions about what you do. And, you know, you want to find somebody who is loving and accepting and not judging of your decisions, whatever they are. Like, I ended up going for a little while to a therapy group that was for adoptees. There's a lot of resources out there now. The second thing I would say is, take it at whatever pace feels comfortable, because for a while, it kind of feels like you're on this roller coaster. And for a while, all my other life stuff felt unimportant
Yeah.
than this huge change that was happening. And I had to take things at my own pace. And sometimes things happen very quickly, and sometimes they happen very slowly. And it also doesn't end. Like, I'm still having ups and downs and feelings and talks with family, and to just know that it's probably going to be a long process, but it will ultimately be worth it. I haven't talked to one person that has found truthful information that has regretted finding.
Yeah.
So Worth it.
Long road, roller coaster, but worth it. Yeah, I can imagine that sort of takes over your life in a way.
It definitely took over mine in a way I was not expecting. And even sometimes there'll be days when I'm very emotional. And it's a hard thing to explain, which is why it's nice to find other adoptees. They're like, oh, that laughing, crying thing. Yeah, I did that too.
Yeah, I can imagine there's just so many different emotions that have been building over the years that you sort of get all of them at once, and that's sort of the laughing, crying thing.
The coming out of the fog, it's really powerful because you can also start taking ownership of the person you are and filling in all, like filling in those blanks feels amazing. It was weird to go in when I had my kids and they're like wanting to do genetic testing, and I'm like, I don't know. I don't know anything. And now I can fill in those blanks. If I'm having a health thing, I can call a family, like a birth family member, and say, hey, did this happen to you? Knowledge is good.
Yeah, so that's true. There's so many other, benefits you can get from it, other than just, like you say, knowing the person and spreading the love. You can sort of fill in the blanks and the health stuff, and there's lots of stuff to be gained from it, it sounds like.
I've also really learned that it's been really good for my own empathy muscle because it's so easy to make assumptions about other people and why things went down the way they did. And just to know that everybody's kind of on their own journey with this whole, and it affects all these people around me, the ripple effect of finding. But for a long time, that prevented me from looking because I was scared of like, how is my adoptive mom going to feel about this? Like, I don't want to hurt anyone. And ultimately, I had to realize that their feelings are their feelings. They're not my responsibility. And I've just tried to be as open with people as possible and let them just have their feelings. And I had to do what I have to do at the end of the day,
Yeah, and I think that's so important that you mention that because, as you say, no matter what you do, somebody's going to judge you. If you look for her, if you don't look for her, so at the end of the day, you just have to do what's right for you. Yeah, I love that. Yeah.
Exactly.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for having me. This
Yeah,
has been
Deidre,
such a
this is
joy to talk
great.
about. I feel like I didn't let you talk at
But
all.
that's okay.
But
It's about you. And I
well, and
loved
to be
hearing your
honest, I really
story.
haven't shared this story much beyond the people that I know in my circle. And it feels really good to share it because I'm like, what if somebody's looking,
Yeah, well, that's great. I mean, that's the reason for the podcast, right? You just want to put it out there and say, this is me and this is what I've gone through. And sometimes it just kind of starts rolling and then it's like a snowball and it rolls faster and faster and faster and then it just comes out. And that's great. I think that's
Like a
great.
baby.
Like a baby. To come full circle, like a
Yes, more like
baby.
a baby.
Exactly, perfect. And Deidre, you're a musician and you help people write songs and all kinds of good stuff. So could you let us know where can our listeners find you on the internet?
Absolutely. My podcast is called The Song Inside, and I interview songwriters about songs that they've written that have gotten them from a dark place to a light place. That's on Spotify or Apple. And I also do coachings and songwritings and workshops and all sorts of good things. And everything is just at thesonginside.me. That's where you can find me.
All right, sounds good. The song inside dot me, and we will stick that in the show notes
Thank you.
for people to find you. Well, thanks so much, Deidre, for being with us, and have a lovely day.
You too. Thanks for having me.
Bye bye.
Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Emerge and Shine Academy. Put yourself out there, move past the fear of public speaking, and have fun doing it. Our monthly membership is 3 sessions a month and a supportive community of women. Don't dim your light, embrace your shine. Learn more on Instagram at Emerge and Shine or on Facebook, Emerge and Shine. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode of Say Your Peace.